You're listening to Transmission Roundtables. Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that's queer thinking, straight talking and always spills the LGBT. On each episode of Queer Ear, we like to shine a light and sometimes throw a little shade on topics that don't get enough mainstream media attention. So on this episode, we're taking a look at a controversial form of abuse disguised as psychiatric help for queer people. Conversion therapy.
Conversion therapy has taken many forms. It's been around since the 19th century, actually. In the 1950s and 60s, there was a hospital called St. Elizabeth's Hospital outside of Washington, D.C. They performed lobotomies, they performed electroshock therapy, they had people in straitjackets. At this moment, 36 states do not have bans on conversion therapy for minors. The bigger battle, however, is that any religious organization can perform conversion therapy and charge for it currently.
The federal government says it is considering changes to the criminal code to ban so-called conversion therapy. Now, this comes after the Alberta city of St. Albert voted this week to ban the practice, which involves coercing or allegedly counseling someone to change their sexual orientation.
I went to a psychiatrist when I was 24. I'd already actually come out as gay, but been rejected by my family. I was depressed and isolated and estranged. And this psychiatrist told me that the goal in therapy would be to face the trauma and it would help revert me to my innate heterosexuality. He prescribed psychiatric medication, a sedative, antidepressants, and then several more antidepressants, ultimately four at the same time with this sedative. Always with this goal of, as he would word it, correcting the error of my homosexuality. He would say we needed to silence my homosexuality. Same-sex feelings never diminished, so the medications were increased. Then he started to inject me with ketamine hydrochloride, which is a animal anesthetic. He did that before reparenting sessions. After being injected with ketamine, and he would nurture me and cuddle me. Nurture, I use these words figuratively. And this would help heal my inner brokenness. So he did this, and he hired a woman to do this with me as a surrogate mother. He started using aversion therapy on me.
Aversion therapy being what, electric shock therapy?
In my case, I'll be blunt. He had me bottle my feces, and he told me I needed to do this to be reminded how gay men had sex. And this would correct my sexuality, which of course only increased self-hatred and the shame. Not coincidentally, around this time during the therapy, privately, I'd started cutting. I had no
cutting
other
yourself.
Way of cutting myself privately.
So were you having suicidal thoughts going through this therapy, supposed therapy?
All the time. But I listened to what the doctor told me I needed to do.
Mike Davidson, director of the Core Issues Trust, who was banned 2 years ago from the British Psychodrama Association because, as a founder member of the Core Issues Trust, you were in breach of the ethical code of both the British Psychodrama Association and the UK Council for Psychotherapy.
That's correct.
Thank you for coming on the programme. Isn't what you're doing effectively modern-day quackery?
Certainly not. We want to be very safe. We want to be transparent. That's why we're open. We're not trying to hide anything.
And what's your aim?
We're aiming to support people who want to voluntarily move away from behaviours and feelings, if that's possible. We want to give them the option and preserve their rights and freedoms to do that.
You don't call it gay conversion therapy. Why not?
Well, because we're not in the business of converting people in the sense that we're not proselytizing. We have people coming from a no-faith background, a different faith background.
But you do want them to change, don't you, in the way that you yourself believe you have changed, having had homosexual experiences in the past?
It's not about our agenda or a therapist's agenda. It's about listening to the client, dealing with whatever it is that they bring on the day, and standing with them as they work out the options that are appropriate for them.
So that was a selection of clips from various news stories in the US, Canada, and the UK. And I want to highlight that conversion therapy is a global issue that affects many queer people all around the world. The last clip that you heard was taken from the Victoria Derbyshire programme on BBC and featured Mike Davidson, the head of the Core Issues Trust, a Christian organisation based in Northern Ireland that offers change-oriented therapy. So it's hard for me to get my head around the fact that something so blatantly discriminatory and abusive could be legalised and legitimised in a place like the UK. And with all the wordy descriptions of what groups like Core Issues Trust offer, it's also quite hard to decipher exactly what their quote-unquote therapy entails. So how can conversion therapy be explained as plainly as possible?
Conversion therapy is the belief that an LGBT individual can be converted back into heterosexual again through various methods. These can involve maybe therapeutic medicines, or they can involve exorcisms, or maybe in violent cases, sometimes electric shock and whatnot. Now, these methods have been proven to not work by many psychotherapy organizations, including the NHS, and they've been widely condemned amongst the therapy community.
That's Mehed Assad. He's a teenage activist who has started a hugely successful petition to see a UK ban on conversion therapy. We'll hear more from Mehed later in the episode, and we'll also be speaking to India's first openly gay monarch, Prince Manvendra, who came out publicly following being subjected to and ultimately surviving several forms of conversion therapy. But first, I wanted to speak to someone who's been working tirelessly for greater awareness of this issue. Victor Mandrigal Borlaws is the United Nations Independent Expert on Protection Against Violence and Discrimination based on Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. Victor recently called for a global ban on so-called conversion therapy, stating that being forced into this should be considered a form of torture. So, given Victor's tireless work and all of his irrefutable evidence on this issue, I wanted to ask him why a ban on conversion therapy around the world hasn't come sooner.
In many, many countries, it is socially unacceptable to be openly gay, bisexual, trans. As a matter of fact, you know that there are 69 countries in the world that still criminalize homosexuality. And therefore, in contexts of such hostility, both of criminalization, but also those contexts in which criminalization doesn't happen, but there's now still hostility to LGBT persons. I think that there is a social acceptance of the idea that being LGBT is somehow making a person inferior to their peers. And therefore, that attempts to actually correct or change or punish that diversity are to be socially acceptable themselves. That's the first one. The second one, I think, has to do with the very deep grooves carved by pathologization, which is the process through which, for a long time, LGBT lives were considered to be somehow disordered. As I'm sure you know, up until 30 years ago, homosexuality was considered a diagnostic under the classification of the World Health Organization. And it's only until last year that gender dysphoria was withdrawn from the classifications of mental illnesses of the World Health Organization. The problem is that the concept and the notions and the stigma associated with this pathologizing concept permeated quite strongly in the medical establishment, within health providers, and in society in general. And so the idea that a cure, between quotation marks, of course, would be desirable and possible is something that people have been hearing for a long time.
And I suppose one other thing that plays into the fact that it's going to be so difficult to eradicate this around the world is that so many countries have such different viewpoints and laws regarding gender identity and sexual orientation. So there's not really one size fits all solution for this problem. Can you maybe just talk about some places that it may be more difficult or the fight might be less great at the moment to ban conversion therapy?
Well, only the day before yesterday, the legislature in Mexico City adopted a ban in relation to this. As you know, quite recently, Germany passed legislation to this effect. There's legislation being studied in Canada, France, Israel is currently under consideration as well. So the thing that to me is important, I think, is while there may be not one-size-fits-all approaches as to how to implement a ban, the fact that I've concluded that all forms of therapy, of so-called conversion therapy, are in their origin discriminatory and in their implementation are degrading, cruel, and inhuman, should provide enough of a framework for fighting these forms of so-called conversion therapy. And the reason is because the prohibition of cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment is pretty much part of universal human rights provisions right now. And therefore, I think that if countries take point of view of the compliance of their international obligations, they should find ways to actually prohibit these treatments.
One other thing I've heard you speak about is money. So can you maybe tell me about just how lucrative this might be for certain quote-unquote charities that specialize in this form of therapy?
Well, depending on the context, what I found is that the cost may well go into the upper tens of thousands of dollars. So we found evidence that significant amounts of these treatments would actually arrive to $30,000 per year. The only country that I know as having made a full inventory of inquiry into the centers that were providing conversion therapy is Ecuador, which did so. And what the state found when doing that inquiry is that there were over 200 centers providing these practices or these forms of treatment, in some cases to 10 persons, in some cases to 100 persons. So the average that I've been working with at the Working Theory is an average cost of $5,000 per year. And in that case, it would have represented business worth hundreds of millions per year.
Finally, what I want to know is, what do you think needs to happen in order for both the general public and people who have power to make this stop realize that it does not hold any legitimate way of changing anyone and it is essentially a legalized form of abuse?
I think that the very best thing is to continue putting the stories out there. The stories of survivors will go a very long way in showing people why this is actually such an inhumane and such a heinous practice. Yesterday, I happened to be at a seminar in which two victims of these practices spoke. The harrowing nature of their lived experience, the basic unfairness of it all became, I think, apparent to everyone just because of the fact that this was shared.
So I completely agree with Victor when he says that putting survivors' stories out there is the best thing that we can do. And it brings me perfectly to my next guest. Prince Manvendra is India's first openly gay monarch. Having appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show, which is frankly life goals, and also in The New York Times, Forbes magazine, and even having given his own TED talk, it's safe to say he is one of the world's most visibly queer royals. But back in 2002, Prince Manvendra was deeply closeted, and when he decided to come out to his parents, the first thing they did was ask doctors to operate on him. When we spoke, he explained just how deeply religion was rooted in his life. It even came into the fact that he was left-handed, which, due to religious reasons, was something his parents tried desperately to change.
In India, a lot of our religious rituals is performed with the help of the right hand. So similarly, when the situation about my sexuality came, the doctors and the psychiatrists said the same thing, that look, you could not change your son from left-handed to right-handed. In the similar way, you cannot change your son from being gay to being straight. You should allow him to be his own self and not to interfere into his sexual behavior or activity.
When you then received conversion therapy, was that something that your parents were hoping would change things?
When science fails, then the person takes to religion. If medical science is not helping in any manner, then the only way to convert me would be to get a religious influence. I'm born into a Hindu family, so they started taking me to those religious institutions. And I will fully participate, I will fully cooperate, and fully listen to whatever people are advising. There is a huge stigma which the parents themselves face. They are not able to even say things like, my son is gay. They would say that he is engaged in an activity which is not acceptable by the society. That is the language they were using. I am guessing that religious leaders were understanding what my parents were saying, even in spite of the not using the word gay in the language.
So, for the next 3 years, Prince Manvendra tried every ritual possible in order to change his sexuality. This affected everything from his mental health to his physical well-being, right down to his diet. He even explained to me how he was told vegetarianism could help his struggles with his sexuality.
Vegetarian versus non-vegetarian is something in India which is very powerful. So I said, okay, I don't mind becoming vegetarian if it's going to help. So I tried that out. Another religious leader told me, you should write the name of God, which is one of the Indian gods. His name is Ram. Take a notebook and every day write his name before you go to sleep. That also I tried. Another person told me, you should do some religious ritual every day. Get up in the morning and do this ritual and that ritual and burn the lamp and do that. Then other one said, you should do yoga, meditation, pranayama, this, that. 3 years, I was constantly being taken to different religious leaders, astrologers, this one, that one. I would leave all my work and I would travel with my parents and very patiently listen to what they are saying with the hope that they would get the results which they were expecting. So I said I became more gay than I became straight, in spite of following 100% of what the people do.
Just following on from those years that you were receiving all of that advice that obviously didn't end up working, it must have been so difficult to get out of that headspace and to take care of your mental health.
Yeah.
Following on all of that abuse, frankly, how have you managed to come out of all of that and to be so vocal on everything you've been through?
I think the torture, the humiliation I faced, the mental harassment I faced by my parents and by many others made me a very strong individual. What happens is when you're denied some things which you want to enjoy, that makes you a more stronger individual than if you are not denied certain things. I was just looking for an opportunity when I can get myself free. And then that freedom came to me with this opportunity by this journalist who wanted to do my coming out story. I took this as an opportunity and I say, I want to break all barriers. I want to break all the stereotypes. I want to break all the royal protocols, rules, regulations, imprisonment. I want to break free from everything and be myself. My greatest success was to break out of this whole thing because I was forced to live a closeted lifestyle and I was forced to live the life of a lie falsehood, which was totally against my principles.
This was back in 2002 and you've been out and proud for a very long time now, and I'm sure a lot has changed around the world since then for LGBTQ people. But I'm wondering if the situation in India for somebody who maybe is in the same position that you were in 2002 is any different, and how far away you think we are from seeing a major change in terms of conversion therapy in India.
I won't say that these things are not happening. These things are happening. But now there is more awareness it was coming out in the media, it was coming out in print media, television, radio, and there were social media networks also with those, which was not that strong in the earlier days. Now we have another thing which has happened in India is that now there is a parents association, which is similar to the PFLAG, which is there in America, PFLAG, which is the parents and friends of lesbians and gays. It's very similar to PFLAG. Rainbow Parent Association is there in India, which is comprising of parents, mothers, fathers, grandparents, uncles, aunts, of all those who have accepted their children as gay or trans or lesbian or whatever. So these parents, through their association, are trying to help out other community people, making them understand why it is necessary to accept the child. That change has come. The community used to reach out to me telling me that our parents are forcing us and they are subjecting us to pressure. And now parents are reaching out telling me, can you help us help our children? How do we do that?
So having heard his story, I think it's safe to say that Prince Manvendra jumped through every hoop possible. And even after 3 years of his best efforts, nothing had really changed. What bothers me more than anything is the futility of it all. The fact that someone could subject themselves, or in some cases be forced into, all of that emotional torture and see none of the desired results, it just seems completely unfair and almost like cruel and unusual punishment to me. Thankfully, it really does seem like actual change is on its way, and I am so happy that Prince Manvendra has found the strength to share his story. It also makes me really happy to see people like Mehed Asad, who we heard from earlier in the episode. Now, believe it or not, he is only 15 years old, and his petition calling for conversion therapy to be stopped in the UK has caused huge waves both online and in Parliament. Alongside groups like Ban Conversion Therapy, his work is really cementing this abuse finally coming to an end. But conversion therapy is still completely legal in the UK. So if I woke up tomorrow morning and wanted to access one of these services, how easy would it be? Mehed Asad again.
So I think you'd find that finding conversion therapies is actually a lot easier than you think. One of the biggest conversion therapies in Northern Ireland, for example, Core Issues Trust, they're a registered charity in Northern Ireland. They're allowed to operate freely and in public. When it comes to what kind of treatments you get, conversion therapies are usually done in the name of religion. In a religious context, what medicines, so to speak, there are, a lot of that involves stuff like exorcisms and whatnot.
I'm actually very glad that you brought up the point of religion, because I know that you've been slightly inspired by a quote in the Quran. Can you just tell me what that quote is and why you wanted to get so involved in this particular issue?
The quote in question is, "O those who believe, stand firm for justice, even if it's against your own people." Now, the reason why I wanted to start this whole kind of campaign against conversion therapy, well, A, because of that quote, it inspires and teaches me to stand up for everyone around me. And B, I've got LGBT friends too. So imagining them going through that trauma and those abhorrent practices, I just thought this can't stand. And that's why I started this whole movement. When I first started this petition, I thought 10,000 signatures was quite a hard goal to get, because 10,000 signatures was the minimum threshold for like the government to respond. But now we've soared way past the required barriers and we're still going higher and higher.
Where do we actually stand in the UK at the moment on what's going to happen with this petition? How far away do you think we are from seeing this issue really being taken seriously and a permanent ban on conversion therapy in the UK?
The entire movement that has started around conversion therapy really has pressured some individuals in the government. For example, Boris Johnson himself openly supported a ban against conversion therapies. If it were to get debated in Parliament, I think we'd be very, very close to getting it banned. With the massive celebrity and online support, I think more and more voices are just being added by the day against conversion therapy. Eventually, I do hope it will come to an end. I mean, with this amount of support, the ultimate end game is really an end to conversion therapy.
Last thing I want to ask you is, you're so young and you've gotten so involved in this activism and something that is so important. What do your friends and, you know, people that you're at school with make of how much progress this has made?
a month ago, I got an email from the head of humanities at my school. According to them, I've reached celebrity status now. So I guess that's an upside. They've been very supportive and I couldn't thank them more for that.
And speaking of support, I can't urge you enough to sign the petition. You can do so by heading to petition.parliament.uk/petitions/300976. We will, of course, be putting a link on our social media, which is at Queer Ear Podcast on Instagram and at Queer Ear Podcast on Twitter as well. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I think it's been a really important one because this issue is completely worldwide, and I think that that has been reflected both in our guests and in the content of what they have said. This is not limited to one particular subgroup of the queer community or one particular country. It affects LGBTQ people all over the world, and quite frankly, it needs to stop now. I actually did end up giving Mike Davidson, who is the head of Core Issues Trust, a call to see what that experience would actually be like. And I've gone over and over in my head whether it's morally right or even legal, frankly, to play you the recording of our conversation. But part of me feels like even platforming someone like him isn't really worth it. At the time of recording this episode, Core Issues Trust were dealt a major blow when Facebook and Twitter joined Instagram in finally banning content promoting vile, traumatizing, quote-unquote, conversion therapy. I want to end this episode by reminding you that conversion therapy shouldn't even have the word therapy in its name. It is nothing more than abuse, and there are countless articles, videos on YouTube, documentaries, and even a recent Hollywood film, Boy Erased, which focuses on this subject and truly shows just how dreadful this type of practice really is. As always, we'll be keeping our eyes peeled for all future developments. I've been Rory Boyle, and all that's left for me to say is thanks for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear.
You're listening to Transmission Roundhouse.